From 2400 Sports, Odyssey, and Major League Baseball, this is the PBP Voices of Baseball.
We bring you the people who bring you the game.
Hello, 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 and welcome into the PBP Voices of Baseball. Matt Spiegel here with you. Really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you will too. I know you will. Jake Eisenberg, the Royals radio man, who does a lot of TV, he and Denny Matthews kind of switch back and forth and work together often as well. Jake Eisenberg is a growing, comfortable amalgam of his influences. And what a thoughtful dude, seemingly wise and comfortable beyond his years. Really enjoyed him, and it touched on a lot of different things, finding our personality as we lean in to the technical nature of the craft, how preparation sometimes means that less is more, learning from elders with humility, so many cool things in here. And a bunch of stories that came to mind and references from previous guests. So if you're a listener to the podcast, you'll feel part of the continuum, as I think Jake now does. And what a nice thing. So here it is, Jake Eisenberg of the Royals, our conversation on today's Complete Game episode of the PBP Voices of Baseball. We began by talking about one of the great joys of the gig, at least in my mind and certainly in his, talking to other broadcasters from booth to booth, learning about the teams you're playing, but it's really a lot more than that.
It's one of my favorite parts of getting to do this job is getting to, you know, flit from booth to booth and talk to everybody and meet everybody. And there are certainly people that I've come to know a little bit more personally and a little bit more closely over the last few years. You know, people that we see, you know, more than once a year, twice a year. So maybe more American League than National League. But even, you know, in the National League, when I was had the chance to do some games with the Mets, I got to meet a lot of the National League folks. And yeah, as much as it's an excuse to go hang out and shoot the breeze and catch up on everyone's lives, yeah, there is some actual work, maybe, in air quotes, that gets done. I mean, I like to try and answer any questions for any other visiting broadcaster that might have them. Hey, like, what's going on with your team lately? What's up with this guy? Or how do you pronounce this guy's name again? Like, there is a, you know, some shop talk that happens. And if I have a specific question, like, I'll definitely go ask it. And more often than not, you know, the answers that I give or the answers that I get, you know, that are about baseball or about the team, if it's not something that I specifically will use, it'll at least send me down a path to go find something that I might use. Like, I've never been in a position where I've been like, oh yeah, you know, I was talking to Corey Provis, who does Twins TV, and he was telling me this about Carlos Correa. That's not something that I would say happens. But maybe I'm talking to Corey or I'm talking to Chris Atterbury, and you know, we're in Minnesota. You know, maybe they'll say something about Brooks Lee or Carson McCusker. They'll mention, you know, his in-zone contact rate or something. I'll say, let me think about that and dive in a little deeper. And then if it comes up later in the game, okay, maybe I now have a little nugget there that I wouldn't have had otherwise. Because, look, we have a breadth of knowledge, certainly about the guys that are on our team. We can't always know all the minutiae or all the trends about everybody all the time.
You know, Dave Raymond, the Rangers TV guy, said hanging out and chatting is the job. That is the job.
He's right. He's absolutely right.
Well, think about it, because what you're saying, the stuff that you're getting in those conversations, which may inform something that comes up in the fourth inning today or the seventh inning tomorrow or in 3 weeks when it gets triggered or whatever and it's rolling around in the brain or you write it down, that's the stuff. That's the gold. But what you just shared, though, is interesting. That I think you're right that as broadcasters, you don't have to attribute stuff you hear from each other as like, and that there's kind of a freedom in that. That's part of a fraternity. Like if you were talking to a coach, you'd say you got it from a coach, especially if it was on the record, something like that. But from the broadcasters, this is the shared knowledge of the game and the league, and what a joy to give that to each other.
Yeah, and I think we all kind of have an understanding of, like, look, we're all trying to do our jobs and have something that's entertaining and fun, but also interesting. And we are all there to kind of help each other. And again, I think it's important to point out that's maybe 15% of the conversation that's happening when we're when we're bouncing around, you know, into booths. You know, I remember last year, and we were just in San Francisco. So, you know, I was remembering this, but had the chance to catch up with John Miller, who's wonderful and remembers literally everything from anything he's ever done ever. And we were talking about how last year when the Giants were in Kansas City, he popped into our home radio booth at Kauffman Stadium. And he was, you know, just sitting with Denny Matthews, longtime radio voice, forever radio voice of the Royals. And the two of them are chatting. And I walked into the booth and I remember freezing in my tracks thinking, oh my God, there's Hall of Famer Denny Matthews and Hall of Famer John Miller just hanging out talking. And I'm just going to do my best to press myself up against the wall and listen for as long as they'll let me or not notice me. And if they happen to notice me and allow me to be a part of the conversation, well, then great, I'll enter. But I am so happy just to stand here and listen to them tell stories about, you know, how John Miller used to be in the adjacent booth to Denny Matthews and Buddy Blattner at the Coliseum in the early 1970s, cutting like practice game tape to send off to teams to try and get a job. And like, that's how he got one of his early jobs with the A's at the Coliseum, that like he and Denny, as you know, 20-something-year-olds Denny was calling the game for the Royals. John was just getting, you know, his feet wet and getting off the ground. But like, here they are 50 years later as Hall of Famers, now about to call the same Royals Giants game. It was just like a bewildering experience. And that happens like quite frequently where, you know, you walk into a booth and boom, there's a legend. And that happens obviously, you know, every day at Kauffman Stadium when I walk into the home radio booth and boom, there's Denny Matthews. A living legend. And I love those conversations,
man. Yeah. That's the vibe you want to give off, is that we're just hanging out, having the conversation while you do the mechanics. You're really good at the mechanics of play by play. And now I get, even just this little bit talking to you, why it's so comfortable. I do this thing that the PBP top five calls of the week. And I was struck, God, several weeks ago, it was just a Drew Waters sliding catch. Okay. That's all it was.
Here's the pitch. Correa swats it in the air. Shallow right center. Waters sprints in. Slides. Makes the catch. Grass stains on his left hip. He hauls it in for the final out in the top of the third inning. An excellent play from Drew Waters, making his first start in center at the K since the end of 2023.
There were just so many little details about him sliding and getting grass stains on the left hip. And so there was nuance and specifics there, but then as he stood up and he's running away, and it's within the 20 seconds of the call, just his second start in center field. It's just like, and you know, in this soundbite society, I got so much out of 20 seconds, 25 seconds. I was so pleased to learn that much in a highlight that just happened to come my way. But it felt radioistic, if that's even a word. And I wonder and I wonder if that's something. I loved it. And I don't know. I know historically, TV, you have to do less, whatever. I hope you never stop doing what you're doing, because it actually brought a lot to the broadcast. I wonder if that crosses your mind when you cross over back and forth as you do.
As you were describing that, I was fully thinking that I was on the radio. And then when you said that I was on TV for that one, I thought, oh, man, did I do a little bit too much description for a TV call? I mean, the truth is my foundation, my background, 90% of my career has been baseball play-by-play on the radio. I didn't really start doing baseball play-by-play on television until I got to the Royals and started doing about 30 games a year, you know, bouncing back and forth and flipping with Ryan Lefevre when he does games on the radio. That's when I'll do games on TV. And, you know, doing about 30 games a year, that's now, let's see, I've done maybe 65-ish if you include spring training total, now entering, you know, my third season with the Royals. And I'm still very much navigating that balance between radio and television. And it is such a wild difference. I mean, it's like two different games, really. It's like apples and steak. It's not even apples and oranges. I do think like they're that, I think they're that different. And early on when I was, you know, first trying to do TV, I was definitely saying way too much and speaking too fast and trying to cram a bunch of stuff in. I didn't really understand the flow with my partner, Rex Hudler, or graphics or all the other stuff we had going on. And I think slowly but surely I figured out the pace of TV, or a pace that I feel comfortable with, and a rhythm on TV that I like. And I think that there are sometimes, there are some cases where that extra level of description on TV is worthwhile or even necessary. And there are other times where it's okay to say fly ball to center, Waters, two gone. I think there's moments for that, depending upon what else is going on in the game and where we are in the game. A sliding catch, you know, maybe it's one to end an inning. If it's early in the game, maybe that's a spot to add a little bit more of, you know, that he's got a grass stain now, or that he's in center field for the first time. I mean, one thing I've learned more recently is that some of those extra bits of information, like that he's in center field for the first time, or, you know, something like that, kind of squeezing that in to the end of a call where you can, I think is oftentimes just as good of an avenue to share that kind of information as just in the regular flow of the game. Where like, you know, if you can say fly ball to right field and Renfro drifts back to the track, he's got it, and there are two outs. You know, Renfro, he's actually tied for the league lead in outfield assists. Like it's a natural way to kind of sneak something in there.
Yeah, and I think the way that people consume baseball and highlights, it's sensible to do that. Like if you're feeling it, just let it flow and it's natural. And I wonder if there's sort of a kind of a natural youthful sensibility of like, here I am in the moment. What do I think? Let's go ahead and get it. Like it felt great to me. It did not feel like too much. And it taught, you know, which is part of the gig.
Well, what's interesting is one thing I've tried to be a lot more attuned to what an actual listener or viewer might do habitually. You know, I consume baseball as a fan far less frequently than I used to when I was growing up, but I certainly will still, you know, watch games. You know, I'll pop on the West Coast game when I get home, whether it's on the radio or on TV. And you know what? Like, I'm as big of a baseball fan and as locked in on the game as anybody's going to find. I mean, heck, I do this 160 times a year. Like, I should be as locked in as I could possibly be. But you know what? Even when I'm, you know, sitting at home, you know, maybe jotting down some notes for the next day or unwinding and watching a West Coast game, but guess what? Like, I'm still scrolling on my phone, like reading Twitter, you know, playing chess or whatever, and I'm not really watching the game. I'm half listening to the game. It's on in the background. And so, you know, I realized that if I'm doing this in like a second screen experience sort of way, like, you know what? Maybe I should say the count every now and again, even though it's on the score bug. Maybe I should say, you know, 2-2 on Bobby Witt Jr. Like, maybe that's not overkill, because whoever's watching at home is also probably not necessarily, you know, fully locked in and watching every single thing that's happening in every single moment. And we certainly are aware of that, you know, when it comes to the radio. You know, on the radio, we're the companion. You know, we're the background noise if you're doing your dishes at home. We're the companion if you're mowing the lawn. Maybe we're, you know, on in the background while you're dropping your kids off at school or picking them up from school or just, you know, going to get gas in your car. Like, we are just kind of part of that life sound fabric in a way that, like, you can't necessarily pay 100% attention. You can pay maybe 75% attention, and I'll let you know vocally if it's time for you to raise that percentage. I'll let you know with my tone if it's time. Okay, big spot, you know, 3-2, tying run at second base with 2 outs. Like, I'll let you know vocally when, like, we got to lock in. Other than that, like, I'm hopeful that it's a conversation that if you want to be locked in, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Great. Come along for the ride. Pretend you're sitting right next to me and we're just hanging out watching a ball game together. I think it's really funny when people are like, yeah, you know, I was listening to the game this past weekend, and then I'm so sorry. I missed the middle innings. I fell asleep on the couch. I wound up taking a nap, and I know that's so bad. Like, I know, like, that's so insulting, and I think that's a huge compliment.
It is the baseball nap.
Yeah. I mean, how many times did I grow up, you know, I love Howie Rose and Gary Cohn. How many times did I grow up watching or listening to them and wind up, you know, taking a nap on the couch. Like so many times, and that's not an insult to them. I take it as a supreme compliment.
Good.
Because to me, it says subconsciously, you know, psychologically, it says to me that our voice and our broadcast is such a comfort to you, is such a thing that relaxes your body that you allow yourself to fall asleep while we're with you, that you're so comfortable with us that you can be at your most rested and relaxed. And then you wake up and guess what? We're still there.
The comfort of the broadcast, it has to be number one, especially on the radio. By the way, I have a friend of mine who started the Sleep Baseball League, where he invented the Northwoods League. I'll send you the link, and listeners, okay. I'll put it in the bio of this episode. It is literally a sleep machine with a fake baseball game that he has produced because for exactly what you're talking about. And it's exquisite. But you know, I'm fascinated by your perception of the radio and TV paradigm, and it might be shifting because the 70% attention that you're saying on radio, because people are doing other stuff, that's probably true these days in TV too, because of the second screen. But you mentioned Howie Rose and Gary Cohen, and I know that they were your—I don't want to say idols necessarily, but
you can say that.
Okay, I'll say it. Howie Rose has been on the show and talked about his work with Gary Cohen when they had a chance to work together. And I love it because Howie, who is older than Gary, says that Gary made him better, dramatically better. And I love that honesty and humility about Howie, and it comes through. But could you give me, is there a moment, a play in a game where you recall being a kid and hearing Howie or Gary in a big game, that's something that we can find? That we could play and just sort of connect to what it was like to grow up with them, because that's an unbelievable, you know, high level of broadcasting to aspire to as a young person.
Yeah, I mean, the two of them, first and foremost, are incredible. I mean, they set the bar so incredibly high, and what a pair of broadcast teachers to naturally have. You know, growing up as a Mets fan in Port Washington, about 20 minutes away from mm-hmm. Shea, and then later Citi Field, and, you know, having those two voices be the ones that I primarily listened to and watched over the course of like my youth and then, you know, young adolescence in college when I was like starting to pay a little bit more attention to the mechanics and stuff like that. Ones that I remember when I was growing up, there's a Howie one that comes to mind from 5 years ago that I think you'll find interesting because it has very little to do with actual baseball. Gary, I don't know, the amount of times that I've heard, you know, it's out of here. I mean, that just seeps into your soul and into your psyche in a way that, like, even now reflexively on a home run every now and again, it comes out of me. Because look, I think as broadcasters, whether you're, you know, a college broadcaster or you're a minor league broadcaster or a major league broadcaster, we are all amalgams of everything we've ever listened to or experienced. You know, I have no doubt that the people that I've listened to growing up, the people that I've gotten a chance to learn from, the people that have been kind enough to critique my tape over the years and give me some feedback, I have taken bits and pieces from all of them. Like, I know in my voice, in my style, in my broadcasting, there's a little bit of Gary Cohen.
Perez deals. Fastball hit in the air to left field. That's deep. Back goes Chavez, back near the wall, leaping, and he made the catch! He took a home run away from Roland, trying to get back to first. Edmonds, he's doubled off!
And there's a little bit of Howie Rose, probably a little bit more of those two than most others.
And it's in there! Strike three called! The Mets win the pennant! The New York Mets have won the National League pennant! Put it in the books!
There's a little bit of Len Casper, and there's a little bit of Eric Nadell, and there's a little bit of Tom Hamilton. Definitely not vocally. I can't do that like he does.
Swung out and blasted! High, deep to right! Gone! How about that?
There's a little bit of John Miller, and there's a little bit of Jason Benetti, and like there's all these different people that I'm hoping to bring together the best parts of. And there's also, you know, hopefully as I continue to get older, a pretty strong percentage of Jake Eisenberg too, as I continue to figure out exactly what that is. I mean, the truth is, like, sure, this is, you know, year 3 and a half, year 4 in the big leagues, depending upon how you look at it. And, year, I don't know, eight of calling actual baseball play-by-play in my life. I'm 30 years old. Like, I still have a lot to learn about myself personally and professionally that I know is going to infuse into my broadcasting. And now that I've successfully dodged your question for as long as I possibly can, I'll give you the Howie moment that sticks out to me.
Good.
It was 2020. I was living with my parents in the midst of COVID quarantine, and the baseball season had just finally begun, and so it gave us this salve, this escape hatch from, you know, the doldrums of all the things that were happening. And, you know, I was taking a walk around the block, and I was listening to the Mets game, and I was listening to Howie, and I'll be honest, I forget exactly what it was, but he made this Seinfeld reference that was like perfect for the moment, because of course it is, and it's Howie, and it's a Seinfeld reference, and it was great. And I remember my dad called me when he was on his way home from work, and he was listening to the game in his car on the way home from work. And I remember saying, I was like, oh, did you hear the Seinfeld reference that Howie made? And he was like, yeah, that was great. And in that moment, I mean, like, it hit me. Oh my goodness. You know, here I am, as at the time, the highest level that I'd reached broadcasting wise was double A. I had gotten the job with the Omaha Storm Chasers to do their triple A games, and I was supposed to have called the 2020 season for them, but obviously that didn't happen at the minor league level. So I hadn't yet even called a triple A game, let alone, you know, a handful of years in the big leagues. But it hit me right then and there. Whoa, here I am as a listener. I'm not saying, hey, did you hear how he called that RBI double into the gap? You know, that's not the thing that resonated with me. The thing that resonated with me was this relatable Seinfeld reference that I thought was funny. And it just struck me that it was like, okay, like, you know, the next time I get the chance to do this, and hopefully I do, because at the time, like, we didn't really know what was going to happen, I got to really think about the things that make people remember them. What are the things that resonate with people? Is it really, you know, the mechanics of how I call an RBI double? Probably not, even though I'm still going to find that really important. I still want to nail that to the best of my ability.
Yeah, man.
But I also now understand a little bit more that the things that are going to resonate, the things that people are going to take away with them, remember the next day, tell their parents about, tell their friends about, connect with, you know, whatever, is probably going to be that pop culture reference or that little joke off to the side, or that, you know, maybe there's a little snark or maybe there's a metaphor thrown in there that just kind of sits with you a little bit more than how you called the RBI double. And so that's one thing from Howie that he helped me realize. And then, you know, the other things from Howie, like, he is a master at tension. There is nobody that builds, creates, and captures late game tension than he does. The way that he goes into the heavy detail of Edwin Diaz bending over, you know, coming set at the chest, sweat dripping from his brow. He kicks away at some dirt at home plate. Here's the pitch. Like, the way that he's able to capture each of those infinitesimal details and bring them all together and raise your heart rate in a fun way.
3-1 to Alonso. The outfield is very deep and straight away. Lindor will take a short walk down the line from third, even though Ortiz is deep. Nimmo leads from first. 3-1 to Alonso. Williams sets. Here's the pitch. Swing and a fly ball to right field. Pretty well hit. Freelick back at the wall. He jumps. It's gone. He did it. He did it. Pete Alonso with the most memorable home run of his career. Pumps his fist as he rounds second. It's a three-run homer. He's given the Mets a 3-2 lead. They all pour out of the dugout. Alonso on his way to home plate. They're waiting for him. He hits the plate. He is first congratulated by Nimmo. Hugged by Lindor. There are a dozen Mets waiting for him outside the dugout. Pete Alonso keeps this fairy tale season going with the fairy tale swing of his career.
One of the key things that I've talked about in this podcast all the way through for three seasons is this balance between being an entertainer and being a technician, and how people come at this from different angles. Like, I got my shot to do an inning and then eventually a few games as a 50-year-old longtime talk show host. I got the broadcasting part down, and in the fun, it's the technician part. There's a ton of young technicians who don't learn the lesson that you just talked about, that the entertainment and the calm and the comfort and the fun, you really have to lean into that. So that's a unique thing to have leaned into at your age. So it makes all the sense in the world. I want to ask you, Jake, about your game prep. Is there a part of your game prep that you can't ignore? Like, I have to do this before every single game or else I feel naked once the game begins.
I think there used to be. I think I used to be trapped a little bit by the game prep, where the prep was sort of the thing in a way that it shouldn't be. Like, I needed to make sure that I had all the stuff written down, every line on my scorecard filled out, every box filled in, every nugget here, like it all had to be there. And if it wasn't kind of this complete scorecard of prep, I felt like I was, you know, going to get caught with my pants down, so to speak. You know, over the course of, you know, however many games in the minors, look, you can't do that every day. It's just not possible, especially when you're in the minors and you're wearing 15 hats at a time. And sometimes that hat is also the one that the mascot wears. Like, you just can't do that all the time. And when you can't do that for the first time, and then you wind up calling what you feel is a halfway decent or pretty good game, it's freeing. The shackles pop off of being shackled to the prep, and you realize, whoa, like, maybe I can do this with, you know, a little bit less than I think. And I'm not saying that I go into a game now with less than I once did. I still strive to have that, you know, filled out, where I want to have all the stuff in the starting pitcher. I want to have a bunch of, you know, kind of 30,000 foot view team notes, trends, stats, storylines, injury updates, that sort of thing. And I like to have one or two nuggets, whether they're statistical or biographical or whimsical, about each guy that's in the starting lineup. I want to have that all filled out. Sometimes, like, that doesn't happen. Or if it's like the third game of a series, you know, sometimes I'll just transfer something that I haven't used yet from, you know, the day before to the next day. And the truth is, Matt, like, there are also days where I purposefully go into a game with a blank scorecard. Wow. Where I don't write any of that stuff down. And I stole that from Keith Hernandez. I was talking to Keith once, and he explained to me, and he comes at this from a slightly different angle as an analyst, but he basically said some days, you know, he's got all his pens and highlighters and stuff, and he has like a really nice scorecard that's in front of him. Sometimes he goes into a game with nothing in front of him. And he says that he does that intentionally every now and again to remind himself to make sure that he's focusing on the game in front of him and analyzing the game in front of him. As an analyst, like, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. How does that make sense for the play-by-play broadcaster? Well, sometimes if I get into a rut play-by-play wise, I'm feeling like the flow's not there. Maybe like I've got some crutch words that, you know, are seeping in that I need to break my habit of, or maybe I'm just getting too bogged down in, you know, in this statistic that's in front of me that I'm trying to share, but is probably maybe a little bit overcomplicated for a radio audience, but I think it's really interesting and I want to share it anyway. I need to break myself of that too. And so I'll kind of pick a game at random. And yeah, invariably it tends to be a day game where there's less time for that anyway, but invariably I'll say, you know what, today's going to be a skeleton day, and I'll just write in the lineups and I'll write in the starting pitchers, and I'll make sure that I am just watching the game and focusing on the game. Yeah. There isn't one thing that I need or don't need when it comes to prep. I find that whatever I have ultimately is what I need, and then the game provides the rest.
Dave Raymond tells a great story about hanging out with Willie Mays in San Francisco. And Willie just kept talking to him. Jake, Willie just kept talking to him, and he couldn't cut off the conversation. He's talking to Willie Mays, you know, and it was an hour. And then all of a sudden it was 90 minutes. And he's like, Willie, I got to go up and do a game. And Willie said, well, you know, we'll hang out another time. So he goes up and he sits down and he's got nothing. That's what reminded me, is that he doesn't have any of his normal prep, and he sits down and it's Matt Cain's perfect game. That's the day.
Amazing.
Right?
Amazing.
And
just so, like, just amazing.
Right? So,
you never know what's going to happen.
He said he felt good about the way he called it. And he kind of had that beginner's mind that you're talking about, where you're sitting there and you're just doing the game with your sensibilities. You know, I'm sure 90 minutes with Willie Mays is going to inform the career a hell of a lot more than whatever prep on that game. Right.
I think it's also important to understand that yeah, there might not be for these, you know, handful of games throughout the season. Yeah, there might not be anything in front of me intentionally. I still have my laptop in front of me. I still have game notes. I still have a media guide. I can still, you know, find things pretty quickly when I need to, especially on my computer. Like I know that I can go to Baseball Reference or FanGraphs or StatHead or Baseball Savant. Like I know where I can pluck things from at a moment's notice when I need them. And I've gotten pretty good at finding those things pretty quickly, which I think is an important skill nowadays, to be able to say, there's something that happened in the game that sparked this thought in my head. I wonder if that's happened before, or the last time that happened, or how that compares to the rest of the league. How can I add more context to this? And sometimes you find something that's like, oh, here's something that I can actually share in the moment. And sometimes you file something away that you remember to kind of flesh out the next day or the rest of the series. So even though there's nothing in front of me sometimes, there's still technically, like when you're thinking about the internet, literally everything is in front of me in some capacity. But as far as prep goes, like I am trying to check all of the mental boxes of the things that I do to get ready for the game. And I know that if I do those things, great. I know that if I don't do those things to, you know, the 100% that I would like to, if I'm only at 50%, I know that I'm still going to be okay.
Is there a specific item that you like to always have with you in the booth? It can be a good luck charm or a talisman or anything that has to be there.
Yeah, I need a headset. I can't call a game if I don't have the microphone or the headset. That's such a cop out. I'm messing with you. I mean, obviously you need a headset.
The stick mic. Some people like the stick mic.
I've never tried the stick mic. I've always had the headset. I like having, you know, the range of motion.
Four color pen.
Yeah, four color pen. Specifically, I've got the one that has like the comfort grip. That I found, you know, I found somewhere, and like I've ordered them on Amazon. So now I have them, you know, for the rest of my years. You know, we'll have, you know, the end of the world, and you'll just find a box of four colored pens in my house, just waiting to be used for a season that will never happen because the world's over. I'm stocked up. I'm ready to go there. And I use all four of those colors throughout the game for various things, you know, that just help me figure out what's happening and what happened.
Marty Brenneman told me that he was a guy who only used the number one pencil. And I didn't even know the number one pencil was a
thing.
That's
a real thing?
The number two, we've grown up with the number two. The number one was a thing. And he loved number one pencils. Then they stopped selling them and he bought them, like you with the four color pen. He bought them by the case because he knew that he wasn't going to be able to find them anymore.
I remember a story about Joey Votto a couple of years ago. He like bought up the ash reserves so that he could have as many ash bats as he wanted, because, you know, the beetle, the emerald ash borer, was destroying all of the ash trees and they couldn't really make those bats the same way. And so he stockpiled all the ash so that he could have the bats that he wanted for the rest of his career, which I thought, yeah, brilliant. Like, go for it. Do it.
Yep.
Don't let the Beatles stop you.
So when the world ends, there's going to be Marty Brenneman's pencils, Joey Votto's ash reserves, and your four-color pens are all going to be hanging.
Hopefully a little bit more for the next civilization to discover and learn about our society with. Because if those are the three items, then I think we've messed up. I don't think we've left enough behind.
They'll also have this podcast. Tell me a moment, Jake, that you loved in the booth. Something that we should go pull and listen to that you're proud of. First thing that comes to mind.
I'll give you a radio and I'll give you a TV. TV, I mean, it's become a seminal moment, I think, in Royals franchise history recently, but it was Bobby Witt Jr.'s walk-off grand slam.
High drive, deep left. Grand slam! Bobby Witt Jr. wins it!
This was July 28th of 2023. I remember the exact date because of how monumental it was. And Bobby Witt Jr. takes this 102 mile an hour single from Yoan Duran, like in on his hands, and he pounds it out to left field for a walk-off grand slam. And at that point in the year, I would not say that he had reached the level of superstardom and MVP level play that he has now ascended to. That was the moment that began his, I think, ascendance to superstardom. And I think we look back on that now as Royals broadcasters and Royals fans, we think, okay, that was the moment where Bobby Witt Jr. arrived to a degree of being one of the best players in baseball. And I remember that moment in the booth and frankly, not really knowing what to say or how to say it. And the only word that came to mind was sensational, because that's what it was.
Bobby Witt Jr. wins it! Sensational!
And I remember that's kind of how I finished that call. And then, you know, did the, what I'll say classic thing is of saying nothing and letting the moment speak for itself, especially on TV. The truth is, like, even if I'd wanted to say something, there was nothing that was coming to mind to say. And so I'm glad that there was a little bit of that frozen reaction, because I look back on that call now and look, the truth is pretty much every single call that I've ever made, I have listened back to and thought, man, I really wish I had said that, or man, that's a thing that, man, if the syntax was a little bit different there, the pacing or the tone, the volume, that could have been a little bit better. There has never been a call that I've made where I've been like, oh, I've nailed that for sure. That's never happened. I'm not sure if it ever will, because we are our own, you know, worst enemies and harshest critics. And with that call in the Grand Slam, I remember thinking, man, I wish I had said this. But I'm also looking back and I think, well, I didn't screw it up, which is half the battle, which is half the battle sometimes. You know, yep. A big moment like that speaks for itself. You don't want to screw it up. And it was also my first year on TV. So I was still very much still navigating the stresses and pressures and everything about what TV is and was. And then as far as radio goes, there are a few that come to mind. There was a Kyle Isbell catch in center field. This was, I think it was July 4th of last year. And he made this incredible catch up against the fence in center in the ninth inning, saved a run, kept the Royals in front. And Izzy makes incredible catches all the time. But I remember that was a call that was a big moment, big spot that I felt particularly good about from a technical standpoint and from an emotional standpoint.
Fastball hit high in the air, deep to center field. Isbell sprints back onto the track. At the fence, leaves. He makes the catch. He snow-coated at the wall. He crashed into the fence and held on for the out. What a grab from Kyle Isbell.
And then, of course, listened back to it and was like, you know what? My verb tense changed kind of halfway through from present tense to past tense. And yeah, it worked, but like it could have been better if I had stayed in present tense and done a little bit better. But I thought the description there was good. And then one from this year, opening day, honestly, opening day, Vinny Pasquantino hit a home run into the Royals bullpen. And I felt pretty good about it, especially for it being the first game of the year.
So now runners on second and third, two outs, bottom of the third inning. Still scoreless between the Royals and Guardians. The 1-1 pitch. Pasquantino hits it high in the air. Deep to right field. Noel's back. Onto the track. At the fence. It's out of here. Vinny Pasquantino hits a three-run homer for the Royals' first runs of 2025. A powder blue bomb into the Royals' bullpen. And it's 3-0 in the bottom of the third.
You know, you have spring training, but that's at spring training ballparks. And so you get to your first, you know, regular season game and all the energy's there and all the fans are there and the ballpark's different and it travels differently. And, you know, I got a good read off it off the bat. I thought there was a pretty decent line in there. The Royals were wearing their powder blue jerseys. And so I remember saying something effective that it was a powder blue bomb, which I thought was fairly poetic. And I was like, okay, you know, like here's a, you know, one of the first big moments of the season. And I think we captured it pretty decently. And like, now we go as human beings. And this is such a human sport. We do it every day. We fail more often than we succeed. We get back up and we do it again. That is humanity. That is baseball. And that is what we have to capture as broadcasters, radio and TV, is the humanity. We have to capture the humanity. And we have to elevate the humanity. And it's the human moments that are going to resonate with us the most.
Jake Eisenberg, wonderful stuff, man. Thank you so much for the time. Great to meet you and get to know you like this.
Likewise, this has been a joy, and I enjoy listening to the other episodes, which are no doubt vastly more entertaining than this one.
Well, we'll see after this one comes out. I'll send you the responses. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Matt.
There he is, Jake Eisenberg. The baseball nap. I'm glad he understands the value of a good baseball nap. Yeah, your job as the broadcaster is to provide comfort. First and foremost, it's a long game. There's only 10 minutes of action in about a 2.5 hour stretch. Got to make sure it's a comfortable listen every step of the way. So if a nap happens, so be it. And again, sleepbaseball.com, or you can search for Sleep Baseball on Spotify. My friend Mr. King with a brilliant creation in that realm. Check it out. It's just hilarious and inventive and incredible. Thank you so much for listening to the PBP. Robbie Triano did an unbelievable job on this episode and has really been doing a great job all year. So thank you to the Tree for producing the show. Thank you to Kurt Morrison for providing the music for the PBP. Thank you to Ryan Porth for being our producer emeritus. And thank you to James Vickery for being my collaborator. The PBP is an Odyssey podcast. Find us on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us on the Score's YouTube page, 670 The Score. That's where you can see the PBP Top 5 every Friday morning. We'll be back with a spot starter episode on Thursday, as always. Thanks so much for listening to the PBP, Voices of Baseball. We bring you the people that bring you the game.